Welcome in to the Towel Boys. I'm Tyler Bischoff. Along with me, Mike Grimala over at runrebs.com. You can catch what I'm writing over at Mountain West Connection. UNLV drops another close game in conference play. Been saying that a lot. Losing 83-82 to Colorado State. A game UNLV had an 18-point lead. Blew it. Colorado State, I thought they were going to kind of take control in the second half. Never really did. UNLV had a chance to win it at the end. Jordan Cornish misses the three. We're going to talk about that last play. A lot of people criticizing what happened on that last play. And Mike, I read what you wrote. Tell me why Rashad Vaughn should have been taking the shot.
It's not even so much that he should have been taking the shot. I mean, Cornish got a good look. The end result of the play was they got a good shooter with an open look. So, I mean, you can't criticize it to that point. But if a guy scores 30 points on 21 shots and he's short of, you know, making the shots that Rashad Vaughn is down the stretch, I don't necessarily need him to take that final shot every time, but I want him involved in the play somehow.
Would you have rather had him bringing it up the floor than Cody Doolin?
I think so. I would want the ball in Vaughn's hands. I think they ran him back towards the ball on the inbound. I don't know how seriously they were trying to get it to him. It wasn't like Colorado State double teamed him or did anything exceptional to deny the ball. On the replays that I saw, it seemed like they, you know, had a guy face guarding him, and I think I want to see the ball in his hands either to, you know, give him a high ball screen. I want him involved in the play somehow. I don't want him standing in the corner, not moving, just being guarded by one man.
So that final play was the same thing UNLV ran when they forced overtime against Utah State and Pat McCaw hit the floater that I still think was an alley-oop. Basically, the design of the play is Cody Doolin brings it up, and then he's supposed to perform a dribble handoff with Pat McCaw, and then McCaw is either supposed to drive it in, try to score, or kick it out to somebody. The difference on this play is against Utah State, Rashad Vaughn inbounded the ball, but against Colorado State, it was Chris Wood inbounding the ball, and so when this time, and Colorado State blew up the dribble handoff, they were playing, their defender was standing on top of Pat McCaw, so there was no way they were going to actually get the dribble handoff to work. But the difference was Rashad Vaughn would have been standing where Chris Wood was standing, which was just to the right of the top of the key on the three-point line, had Rashad Vaughn inbounded the ball, which is how they ran it against Utah State. So I don't know if that was a confusion part because they weren't sure they were getting the ball back or not, or what, but they ran that a little differently or they messed it up somehow. But I will say this. They ran a play. They ran a play that has worked, and they got a really good look on it. A lot of times when it comes down to criticizing coaching, it's more about does the guy make the shot than actually was it a good play call. Because if Jordan Cornish makes that shot, nobody's mad at Dave Rice for drawing up a play that ends up with Jordan Cornish shooting the three.
I mean, it was an open shot. It's good for an end-of-game situation like that. I mean, they were down by one, and it was a three-pointer. But, I mean, a jump shot is a jump shot, in my opinion. And that was a pretty good look for a guy who has a really good percentage this year.
To me, the one problem with it, and this is what a lot of people have said, is just the guy who was taking it. And it's not because Jordan Cornish, you know, he's 48% from three now after that shot. He was like 50% from three, I think, going into the game. So it's not so much that Jordan Cornish can't make the shot. It's just the fact that he is the eighth leading scorer in an eight-man rotation. He has accounted for like 5 or 6% of UNLV's shots this year. And if you look at Jordan Cornish in the last 3 minutes of regulation or overtime, he's now 0-for-5 from the floor. And that was the first time he's taken a shot in the final minute of a game, with the exception of a shot he took against St. Catherine, which isn't really comparable. So it's not that Cornish can't make the shot, and I do like, you know, okay, if you told me Jordan Cornish is taking a wide open three, I'd be okay. That's something good you got with 9 seconds left. But it's just the fact that he has not been in that situation shooting with less than 5 seconds left, and he's, you know, overall your eighth. I guess you could move him up to seventh option offensively. So that's, to me, that's the only valid criticism. Otherwise, like, here's the thing. You say they should have given it to Rashad Vaughn, or Rashad Vaughn should have been involved. A lot of people have said that, but I feel like a lot of people would have rather seen Rashad Vaughn have an isolation to win the game. And if UNLV did that and Rashad Vaughn missed it, Dave Rice would be getting raked over the coals today for not running a play on the final possession.
You think that hero ball is one thing. I can getting the ball in his hands or getting him involved in the, like, to use that term again, getting him involved in some way as a threat. I don't know. Just after watching him sort of his shooting keep UNLV in that game, I don't know if it would have been criticized so much if he had, you know, missed the final shot or if he had, you know, not made the right play in that situation. I don't know. You can come down on either side. I agree with you. They did get a good shot. You can't really criticize the end result of that play. He missed the shot. It's a make-miss game. You make it and you win. You miss it and you lose. They got a good shot. You can't really criticize the play call. I personally would have wanted to see Vaughn, you know, get in there somehow.
Yeah, I agree. Have we seen Rashad Vaughn bring the ball up the floor like at all this season?
We've seen a few times. I mean, I wouldn't say it's uncommon. You know, there are a few times that, you know, teams are trapping in the backcourt,
yeah,
situations like that. You know, they'll outlet to Vaughn and he'll bring it up. I don't think it's in his skill set. He can do that.
Yeah, I ask that because, I mean, I can't recall a time where Rashad Vaughn pushed it up and hit a pull-up jumper, or Rashad Vaughn pushed it up and, I don't know, off a ball screen. And, yeah, needing a basket in 10 seconds. Most of what Rashad Vaughn does for UNLV is he runs off of some sort of baseline or pin-down screen, catches on the wing, and either shoots a three or is able to drive and get to the basket. That's what Rashad Vaughn has done really well. I'm sure he's capable of bringing the ball up and getting a shot off by himself in 10 seconds. We just haven't really seen that from him. That's not been something UNLV's gone to. So, I don't know. To me, I like the play call overall. I think the one thing, like I said, is switching Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood. That way it's Vaughn, because Cody Doolin gets in the lane. The help side defense came off of Cornish, and then Chris Wood's man had started to run at Cody Doolin as well. If that's Rashad Vaughn there, actually, if it's Rashad Vaughn there, I don't think they help off of him to begin with. Because Vaughn standing in the corner, that's the only defender that didn't sink into the lane when Doolin drove. He was glued to Rashad Vaughn. So I think Rashad Vaughn wasn't going to be involved in the play unless he brought it up, because I don't think Colorado State was going to let him catch it in the half court.
Yeah. I mean, there was some luck involved in that play. Did Doolin travel?
He did. Yeah,
I mean, it looked like a pretty obvious travel.
He changed his pivot foot as he picked the ball up. He changed his pivot foot and then made a step and passed it. Yeah, he traveled.
Yeah. So I mean, some luck involved. I mean, the main option was the handoff and that got blown up. Then you get the travel that wasn't called. And then, I mean, credit to Doolin, he did, you know, find Cornish. He eventually found the open man. But, I mean, some luck involved in getting that open shot, too.
I've seen people say, why shoot a three when you're down one? What do you think of that criticism?
I think if you're shooting a jump shot, it's pretty, from once you get to the free throw line and out, it's pretty much all the same. I mean, percentages aren't going to move that much on from, you know, a long two-pointer to a three-pointer. Most players are more comfortable, I think, shooting from that spot than they would be shooting a jumper from two steps in from where Cornish was.
Would you have rather seen Cody Doolin try to shoot a runner from where he was when he passed it, or seen Jordan Cornish shoot the
ball? I would take the guy squared up from a spot that he's comfortable shooting. I would take Cornish shooting that ball.
That's what I agree with, too, because when Doolin got into the lane, I thought he was about to put it up, and I was like, oh. And then he dished out the corners, and I was like, that's a much better shot.
I mean, if Doolin had been able to keep his dribble and sort of, you know, dribble into the lane, maybe take an off-balance, you know, floater or, you know, something off the dribble, I would feel better about that maybe. But from the spot where he was after he'd picked it up and he's kind of shuffling and, you know, kind of confused, I'm not sure. I don't want to take that shot. But, I mean, if he'd been able to get into the lane, maybe a different story. But I like, for the way that play played out, I like Cornish ending up with that shot. I think he was probably the right play.
With Cody Doolin, because the color analyst for CBS Sports Network said it about three or four times, you know, if he doesn't have a point guard that can break down a defense. And it's a valid criticism because we've seen him do it against Portland, and then we've kind of seen it randomly but not consistently. It's kind of like when we talk about Chris Wood and him not being consistent. When Cody Doolin needs to, he can get from the top of the key to the basket and make a layup. He did it against Portland. He did it against Colorado State. And then on the final play, he gets into the lane when UNLV needs something, and he created an open shot. I don't know what to make of it, because to me it seems like a lot of times he comes off a ball screen and doesn't look to attack. But when he does, he seems to have success. I think he's leading the team in terms of field goal percentage at the rim. I think he's like at 65% or something like that. So he can do it. He just doesn't do it often.
I think something that the analyst said during that game as well is that he's more of an east-west player as opposed to a north-south player. He takes those ball screens, and you don't really see him turning the corner aggressively and, you know, pressing the issue and forcing the defense to move or to change. I don't see him pressing a lot. You see McCaw doing more of that. So the difference is kind of stark in the way that they play the position. You'll see McCaw take those screens. He'll turn the corner, and he'll press his way into the lane and then sort of pass from there, whereas Doolin, you see sort of take those screens, and then he'll sort of fade off to the wing and not really turn the corner. I don't know if it's a confidence issue, not, you know, trusting himself to be able to get that edge and to get around those defenders. But it's something that we haven't seen consistently.
But he's really good when he does it. Like, and, you know, I guess we didn't see him do it against Arizona or Kansas. But
maybe he's good when he does it because he picks his spots against defenses and defenders that he knows he can get around. I'm not sure, but we haven't seen it.
And the last play, a big reason why he was still able to get into the lane was because UNLV had five guys on the perimeter. There was nobody was at the block, so he didn't have to worry about a help side defender coming straight up at him. So that's another thing. My favorite criticism that I saw on Twitter of Dave Rice was from Mark Ziegler, who covers San Diego State, who said in a tweet, "Rebels have ball, down one, timeout to diagram a play, run no offense, jack up contested three." I think one sentence in that is actually correct, and that was that they had the ball down one.
Yeah, there's no timeout. they ran a play, a pretty well-defined play, and I think they got a pretty good shot.
Yeah, so, I don't know. He did delete that tweet, though, because at least four people that cover UNLV somehow tweeted at him basically saying, "What were you watching? He was wide open," or they definitely did run a play. On Cody Doolin, how much should he play? How much should Pat McCall run the point? How much should Cody Doolin run the point?
Let's see. I don't have numbers for those guys at the positions yet. Doolin in that game, 28 minutes. McCall, 31 minutes. I haven't broken it down yet in terms of, you know, how many minutes each guy was playing point, but I think we saw a long stretch of McCall playing the one, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I don't like. There's things that Cody Doolin does that I like, in that he does help space the floor, and he does help the defense get organized, even if he's not a great defender himself. And
are you going there? Are you going to ask if this team can win the Mountain West tournament with Cody Doolin at point guard?
I think so, because offensively, they're much better when they're able to get in transition, and or even off of made baskets, or even, you know, you obviously get in transition off of steals, and that's not directly related to Cody Doolin, or long rebounds, which is what they did against Colorado State, was getting long rebounds and turning them into fast breaks. But even off of makes or even off of misses that aren't long rebounds, Pat McCaw, I feel like, pushes the ball a lot more and can create offense in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. Whereas Cody Doolin has been more the point guard to, we're going to get it across half court with 28 on the shot clock, and now we're going to look back and set up a half court set. And UNLV's offense is much more efficient when they get up and they get a shot off in 10 seconds in the shot clock than when they let the defense get set and UNLV tries to run a half court set. I like a lot of what Cody Doolin does, but offensively, this team is better when Pat McCaw is out there pushing the ball up the floor as soon as he gets his hand on it.
We saw it in the first half at Colorado State. Was it three fast break dunks in a row just from him pushing
three
the ball?
Three alley-oops!
Yeah, pushing the ball and getting it to the middle of the floor and really putting stress on the defense, forcing them to commit when they're still out of position, and then just easy lobs. I mean, we haven't seen that a lot. We haven't seen it really at all with Doolin sort of creating transition just with his speed and awareness in the open court. But McCaw can do that.
Is this team better going McCaw, Vaughn, Kendrick, Wood, Okonobo as their best five?
I don't know. I like McCaw, Vaughn, Kendrick on the floor at the same time. I'm still not convinced on Wood and Okonobo at the same time. I think you need one of those guys on the floor. I don't think you need them both on the floor. And that fourth guy can either, I mean, it can be Cornish, maybe, if he's, you know, if he continues shooting the way he has. I mean, that's a small team if you get Kendrick at the four pretty much full time.
I like that line. I think that's my favorite lineup is McCaw, Vaughn, Kendrick, Cornish, and Wood, or Okonobo if Wood's hurt or in foul trouble or something. I think that's the best. Those aren't the five best players on UNLV, but that's, I think, the best lineup to win games.
I mean, the problem comes when you've got no guards really to come off the bench in that lineup. You're basically rolling them all out there to start the game, and
yeah,
then you're subbing. The only time those guys are going to get rest is when you go big by putting in Wood and Okonobo, or by subbing in Morgan at the four and taking one of those guards off the court.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, Cornish played 10 minutes against Colorado State. That's all he's really going to play. So that lineup isn't really going to come to fruition that often, I don't think. But I don't know. To me, there's a stark difference in UNLV's best five players and UNLV's best lineup.
So your McCaw, Vaughn, Cornish, Kendrick, Okonobo lineup, not taking last night's game into account, has played 36 seconds together this season. And that same line, the McCaw, Vaughn, Cornish, Kendrick, Wood, 9 minutes 40 seconds, outscored opponents 24-20. I mean, very small sample, not taking last night's game into account, but not a lot of run for those guys.
I really feel like if you put that lineup on the floor, you've got really good spacing. Not, you know, Kendrick's not a great shooter, but he still spaces the floor better than Okonobo or Wood would be able to do. I really think Pat McCaw and Rashad Vaughn could really shine with that lineup. Like, I think they'd be able to get to the lane and either score or draw a help defender from the three-point line, and it would be open threes and layups all day.
And I think it's the fans are in this, the Rebel fans are so conditioned to thinking that, watching, you know, the last 2-3 years, that three-pointers are bad because those teams couldn't shoot. I think that they're kind of scared now when they see UNLV shooting this many threes, but, I mean, that's kind of where a lot of their offense comes from now. They're shooting over 38% since the start of conference play. I mean, they're a good three-point shooting team now. They're not great, but they're a good three-point shooting team. I mean, open threes are the shots that you want.
Does it drive you crazy when Rashad Vaughn catches on the wing, like hesitates for 2 seconds, and then just puts up a three anyway? Like, he comes off the screen and is open for a three, but then he waits for the defenders, kind of sizes him up, and says, I'm going to shoot a three anyway.
Hey, what if I'm not,
and he makes it.
I don't know, like, what sort of offense he's used to running. Maybe he's not a guy who's used to catching and shoot, you know, firing right away off screens. Maybe that's a skill that he's got to learn. I don't know. But, I mean, I think that people are going to have to get used to the fact that college basketball, you want to shoot three-pointers when they're open. Like, you run offense to try and create open threes. Those are the shots you want.
He doesn't have a quick release at all. Nobody on the team has a quick release except Dantley. Pat sometimes can get a quick release. But Rashad doesn't have a quick release at all, and I haven't paid enough attention to it. Is he able to get off those threes even when the defender's right on him because they're afraid he's going to drive by him at the same time?
Well, he doesn't have a quick release, but what he does have is a very high release, which I think helps. Okay. He gets good elevation.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets lift on his jump shot. A lot of guys you see, you know, basically coming off, you know, their tiptoes or just getting off the floor. But Vaughn really, he elevates, and then he's got a high release, so I'm sure that helps.
Yeah. Jordan Cornish has a real, he gets a lot of lift when he shoots, too.
Yeah, and he's got the little hesitation cock in, you know, at the top of his jump, which is, you know, kind of funky, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of, Chris Wood, when he pumps fake, does that, like, leg kick back.
The long
thing.
Step, yeah, where he's dragging his leg in midair and swinging his leg out, and. Yeah.
There's a lot of strength. Didn't Good Luck Okonobo hit a jump shot?
He did. He caught a ball at the elbow, and he just, no hesitation, went right up and knocked it in. I mean, I almost tweeted, like, hey, if the defense should have forced him 3 feet to the right, and they wouldn't have had to worry about it. But from the elbow, apparently, he's money.
Is he still, like, 30% from the free throw line?
Yeah, he's under 40%.
Okay, that's rough. All right. First, before we move on to something else, I got to give an update on UNLV knowing how to win. So November 14th until December 30th, they knew how to win close games. December 31st to January 21st, they forgot how to win close games. But then January 22nd to February 6th, they remembered again how to win close games. But then on February 7th, they forgot again. So I guess, I don't know, maybe somebody has those Men in Black memory erasers and that's how they keep forgetting how to win close games, but I don't know, man.
Do they teach courses on that? At UNLV? Is that an elective? Maybe we could get some of the guys in that class.
All right. You watched the game on TV. I don't know if you heard... Allie LaForce, the sideline reporter for CBS Sports Network, the very first time she talked, she was talking about Larry Eustachy. Colorado State lost to Wyoming during the week. They had their worst offensive performance of the season, and they're the most efficient offense in the conference. And Allie LaForce reported that Larry Eustachy, the day after that game, told his team, no, we're not going to have practice. You guys, I think he said they went out and, like, ate together or something. He told them to go eat dinner together or something like that. Go do something as a team together. And then the next day at practice, he left after 15 minutes and told the seniors, you guys just run practice the rest of the day. What would have happened if that had been about Dave Rice?
I don't know if Dave Rice could survive a move like that in terms of public perception. I mean, the narrative on Dave Rice already is that he doesn't coach enough. You know, he's a quote-unquote roll-the-balls-out-there coach. And, you know, as you say, everybody on Twitter, oh, they don't run plays, they don't do this, they don't do that. So I don't think Dave Rice could get away with taking the anti-coaching route where he just, you know, basically walked away and said, you guys coach yourself. I don't think he could get away with that.
The way Colorado State started that game, they looked like a team that had no clue who they were.
They looked like a team that had not practiced.
Pat McCaw throws alley-oops. If you've watched, like, as an opponent, any tape on UNLV, you know Pat McCaw throws alley-oops. And they did nothing to take that away. And their zone offense was horrendous. I mean, they were just, it was kind of like what we've seen from UNLV at the start of games against zones. Pass it around the perimeter, okay, I'm going to shoot a three now. And that's all they did. Once Eustachy finally took his second time out and was like, hey guys, they're running the 2-3 zone, let's throw it to the free throw line. Colorado State started crushing the 2-3 zone. They got to the free throw line and it was over for UNLV's defense. But for 10 minutes, it was like, holy hell, no wonder you guys suck. Your coach didn't do anything the last 2 days.
Yeah, was that the the best that an opponent has looked against UNLV's zone defense this year? Colorado State in the, you know, from the that 10-minute mark on?
I think so. I'm trying to remember. UNLV didn't go zone against Wyoming, did they? I remember the first half. The first half, Wyoming carved up UNLV's man defense. I don't remember if UNLV went zone in the second half. But, yeah, I think that was the best somebody's looked, other than, you know, maybe Stanford drilling 70% of their threes. But that was more about Stanford drilling 70% of their threes, which is unimaginable.
This
Colorado State just, I mean,
they picked it apart.
Every pass, yeah, every pass was great.
It was, like it was, you know, interior passing. Each guy seemed to know what he was going to do with the ball before he caught it. You know, he's already on to the next pass, and a lot of open shots around the basket.
I was really hoping UNLV was going to beat Colorado State by like 40 after I heard about Eustachy not coaching his team, because can you imagine like doing so, like you have the worst day of the year at your job, and then the next 2 days you just don't show up?
I can't.
Like, that's what Larry Eustachy did. His offense had its worst game of the season against Wyoming, and he just didn't show up the next 2 days to work. Like, I can't get over that. And that's what they look like, and then, I don't know. Like, honestly, Dave Rice was coaching against J.J. Avila in the first 12 minutes of the game, and that's what it looked like, because UNLV was crushing him.
Yeah.
But then once Larry Eustachy started coaching, okay, here comes Colorado State, and here comes their good offense, because their coach decided he was going to have an impact on the game. I don't know. It was weird. But I don't ask, is blowing an 18-point lead a big deal?
Not that early in the game. I mean, when they were up 18, did you really expect them to cruise, you know, to a 20-point win? I don't think anyone did.
No, and I agree. I mean, you know, obviously that's a lot of points, and it's not good, but, you know, that's part of the criticism after the game is blowing an 18-point. It was the first half. Basically, the first half was UNLV dominating for 10, 11 minutes, and then Colorado State dominating for 9 or 10 minutes is basically what happened. And that ended up being sort of a wash, even though UNLV had a 2-point lead. I don't, you know, if you blow an 18-point lead with, like, 5 or 6 to play, yeah, that's a big deal. But if there's 12 minutes left in the first half,
You can't even see the finish line from the point they were up 18 points. So, I mean, that's not... I wouldn't consider it a huge... You know, you get up that big that early, it's always like conventional wisdom, get it to single digits by halftime, and it's, you know, then it's just a normal game. And
Colorado State had it to single digits in like 5 first half.
So, I mean,
they just... Yeah, I honestly believe the first half was a matter of Larry Eustachy didn't coach the team, and then he took a couple timeouts and said, okay, this is what we're going to do, and it's going to work. And I honestly believe that's what happened in the first half. I don't think there's any other explanation to it.
So I guess whatever message he was trying to send, the end result is if you win, it's a good move.
Oh, Larry Eustachy. All right, so Fresno State is coming up for UNLV, a team that's ahead of UNLV in the conference standings at 6-4, but they are under 500 at 11-12. And right now, KenPom projects Fresno State to win just one more conference game, and that is a home game against Air Force. Otherwise, they're going to lose everything. I haven't seen Fresno State play this year, so I don't really know what I can tell you. You know, their defense isn't very good. Their offense is a little bit worse, and they don't shoot three pointers very well at all. Let's see. They're in the bottom 20 of the country in 3-point percentage. So UNLV wins by 10, less or more.
Less. I could see them winning, you know, 7, 8 points, something like that. I don't know. I have trouble putting I'm not sure what the line is going to be, but I have trouble seeing them beating anyone by double digits. I can't just give them a 10-point win over anyone. San Jose State maybe, but in Fresno State historically the last few years have given them trouble. So I'm not willing to call UNLV in a blowout yet.
I think UNLV's going to win by double digits. Fresno State, the reason they're 6-4 is they've played 6 games against Reno, San Jose State, and Utah State. And then they beat San Diego State the second conference game of the year. That's I mean, that's a good win. That's the only thing they've done that's been like, oh, they should be taken seriously. Otherwise, they got blown out by Colorado State. San Diego State beat them by 11 in Fresno. They did take Wyoming to triple overtime, but I just have, I have no, like, if you look at their non-conference schedule, let's see, their toughest non-conference game was UC Irvine. That's impressive. That's hard to do. That's hard to play a schedule that bad. How the hell do you play a schedule that bad? That's incredible. They played, what's Bristol? They played a thing called Bristol. Is that Division II or is that NAIA?
I don't know.
That's nice, Fresno State. And they still, you play a non-conference schedule that bad and you still have a losing record. They lost five straight games in Northern Arizona, Evansville, East Carolina, Marist, and Cal. That's impressive. They went to some tournament. What tournament was that? I'm just randomly talking shit about Fresno State's schedule. They played in a tournament that was Evansville, East Carolina, Marist, and Fresno State. What tournament was that? Who put that on?
I don't know. Where would you even hold a tournament like that?
I don't know. That is, Jesus. It was in Estero, Florida.
That makes sense somehow.
Guess. I don't know. That's impressive. UNLV's going to win by 10. Fresno State can't shoot threes. That's all I need to see. And they don't get offensive rebounds. Yeah, UNLV's going to crush them.
That may be the biggest factor.
It's not. Yeah, it looks like they're the worst offensive rebounding team in the country.
Although, I think I'm looking at it right now. Cesar Guerrero is their guard. I think they haven't had him until the past six games, it looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, he's back now. That may change things. He's gave you any problems last year.
Does he run the point, or does Marvell Harris run?
I think Guerrero is the ball handler for the most of the time. I don't have their breakdowns in front of me. Like I said, I don't know. I haven't seen Fresno State this year yet. I'm just going on what I remember from last year. Harris is a good player. Guerrero seems to be the guy, you know, running the team.
Yeah, Guerrero scored in double figures every game except their loss to San Diego State. Hasn't shot the ball too well from three. He was 2 of 10 against Wyoming. But, I don't know. It's a home game. I haven't been sold on Fresno State, like, at all this year. I don't think anybody really has. So, I don't know. I think it'll be a 10-point win for UNLV. But like I said, I haven't seen Fresno play this year. So, don't really take that to heart too much. They kind of shoot a lot of threes for not being a good three-point shooting team. 34% of their shots are threes, and they make 29% of them. That's not a good strategy.
What's it?
UNLV's going to zone the hell out.
Yeah.
They are going to run. They aren't even going to think about playing man. There's no way. I was a little surprised they didn't play a bit more man against Colorado State.
Yeah, I mean, the way Colorado State was just tearing apart. I'm sure they wouldn't have gotten better shots against man, because the shots they were getting against the zone were pretty much as good as you can manufacture. So I'm not sure like that man would have been any worse.
Is UNLV going to make it in the top six?
Let me pull up these standings.
They have the same amount of wins as Air Force right now. In case you were wondering, after Air Force's 23-point beatdown of Wyoming, who didn't have Larry Nance, but still 23 points,
they can catch Utah State, they can catch Fresno State. I think they'll make it.
Yeah, I do too. Utah State just beat New Mexico, so that was a bit of a surprise. But I think UNLV. We said this last show. We both kind of agreed with fifth place, right? Isn't that what you said? Okay, yeah. I still think that's where they end up. I was sort of expecting a loss to Colorado State, so that didn't change too much. But beat Fresno State. They are going to have to beat Utah State on the road.
You're going to have to beat Boise State at home.
Yeah, you're going to have to beat Boise at home. And
I assume Boise is the other team that you expect them to catch? Or are you thinking New Mexico?
No, New Mexico. Okay. Yeah, New Mexico. But and again, that means that, well, they don't have to, but it probably means they have to beat New Mexico in New Mexico, which is iffy, but New Mexico hasn't looked good, you know, the last couple games either. So I don't know. Is the Mountain West who's going to win this conference? Not who's going to win it. Who's going to make the NCAA tournament in this conference?
Like San Diego State is probably the leader. I think that would be my pick to win the tournament, the conference tournament, and then Wyoming.
How many teams do you think have a chance right now?
I think those two. Colorado State's got a shot. Boise State has got a shot, depending on where they end up. That's it. I would say like those four are your best bets. Probably.
Yeah, I think those are the only four that have a chance at an at-large bid. Everybody else is going to have to win the conference tournament. I think San Diego State's in. I would put Colorado State as the second team if you told me to pick a number two team to go. I think it's going to end up being Colorado State.
Over Wyoming.
Is Larry Nance supposed to be back for their next game?
I'm not sure.
They play San Diego State on Wednesday, so they'll kind of need him. I wonder, because losing by 23 points to Air Force is a pretty bad loss, how much will the committee say, okay, they didn't have Larry Nance, so we're going to kind of not count that one?
I don't know. I don't know how much that will factor in. I mean,
I think they do that. I think they're like,
especially
oh.
For a player that important to a team, you've got to factor it in. You can't just black and white wins and losses.
But I think end of the regular season, I think San Diego State and Colorado State will be in, regardless of what happened in the conference tournament. And I think Boise and Wyoming will have a chance to play their way in without winning it. But be very close on the bubble, and then I think everybody else in this conference would have to win it to get in.
So you would put the over under on Mountain West teams at 2.5.
I'd probably put it at 2, yeah, or whatever. I guess you can say 2.5 if you don't want to have a push, but yeah. So I don't know, and you know it's still UNLV is now third in conference play offensive efficiency. They are behind Boise and Colorado State, who have both been, like, Derek Marks has been incredible, and Colorado State's hitting everything from three. Or, excuse me, Boise's hitting everything from three. Colorado State's just been good with J.J. Avila and everything. That's I don't know. To me, that's impressive that they're third in offensive efficiency in conference play.
They have kicked it up. The offense has not been a problem, for the most part, since the start of Mountain West. They're shooting better. Aesthetically, the ball movement has been better. They seem to have a better understanding of what they're trying to do. Roles seem more defined. That's a big thing that Rice has been talking about the past couple of weeks is McCaw has sort of solidified himself as the third scorer. So I think you've got sort of a pecking order and just more well-defined roles. Seem like people know what they should be doing on the court and in the offense, their position and what they should be doing on any given play. So, I mean, it's looked good. The results have been pretty good. I mean, the offense has come around.
The defense sucks. It's eighth in the Mountain West in defensive efficiency. The three worst teams in the conference, the only ones below UNLV. Is the problem with this defense is that they only have two good one-on-one defenders?
I think you're trying to build a defense, there are certain things you want. You know, you want a guy that can lock down the perimeter, opposing ball handlers. You know, you want to take whoever's primary ball handler, you want to make it difficult for them. You want a guy who can defend the wing. You want a guy who can defend the rim. And UNLV has a lot of those pieces. But then the second part is sort of bringing it all together and, you know, playing on a string, to use the basketball term. Like, you want those guys to be moving in unison, everybody on the same page, you know, closing gaps, rotating. I don't think they're there yet. I don't think they're close to being there. I think a lot of that is experience and coaching, and I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. I mean, Pat McCaw, Jalon Kendrick are your best two defenders, but, you know, Pat still gets beaten off the dribble every now and then. Cody Doolin, Rashad Vaughn, Jordan Cornish, none of those guys are, I would probably put all three at below average defensively. I don't know that I've paid enough attention to Cornish on defense, but, and then Chris Wood is not a good one-on-one post defender. Good Luck Okonobo is better, but he's kind of, I'm going to go block your shot, and that leaves them open to other things. I just don't think they have good defensive players, and that's why the defense has been struggling in conference play.
Yeah. I mean, some pieces, they have Kendrick, a guy who can play on the wing. They've got McCaw, who can, he's got the length, he can bother some guys, but yeah, a lot of them just haven't learned how to do it yet. Like Okonobo, he can block shots, but moving side to side, rotating, helping, and when to, challenge a shot and when to put his back on someone and block out. Those things you just have to learn and you just have to be coached.
We both agree UNLV's offense is better when they get out and run, right?
Yes.
Okay, and I think most teams are better in transition, but I think this team is significantly better. And UNLV doesn't force turnovers. They're the worst defense in the conference in terms of forcing turnovers. And I know, Dave Rice's teams don't pressure that much. They don't force a lot of turnovers. Would they be better off trying to do that? Is the reward of getting a few more steals and a few more easy baskets worth the risk of getting beat backdoor and getting beaten off the dribble and the defense getting broken down even more?
I don't think they can play that style. It's the past 2 years that I've been covering the team, both years, preseason, that was sort of Rice was, telling the media, we want to play a pressure defense. We want to force turnovers. We want to get steals. We want to get into the open court. We want to be run and gun. We want to pressure full court. We want, he was saying all those things, but, they would try to do it in preseason and it wouldn't work. And they would try to do it in the first couple of games and it wouldn't work. And then both seasons, five or six games in, that was the last you saw of it. I just don't think that they can. I'm not sure that they're willing to make that trade-off. If you're going to play that system, you have to be willing to give up a few easy baskets for the greater good of, wearing a team down and creating, transition and just generally increasing the tempo of the game. Even if you're not getting stops, you're still increasing the tempo by playing that way, which helps your offense. I'm not sure that they have the patience or the commitment. If you're going to play that defense, you've got to commit to it and play it all out. I don't think that the coaches want to do that.
I think they could get away with doing it against a team that can't shoot threes, like Fresno. Because if you get out and pressure, you force some turnovers, you get some easy baskets, but at the same time, you're going to get crossed over, you're going to get beat by a good pass. You're going to give up, lanes to the basket, but UNLV has Chris Wood, Good Luck Okonobo, who can step up and block shots and kind of erase those mistakes. I think you could get away with it against Fresno might kick it out and they'll miss their threes. I don't think you could do that against a good three-point shooting team like, say, Boise State, because they'd kick it out and they'd burn you for threes. But I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it, but I think on a matchup basis, if it was, it would be against a team that can't shoot like Fresno.
I mean, I can see it in theory, but after the last two seasons, I'm not sure. I don't think the coaching staff wants to go in that direction. I don't think that they have the patience for it or the commitment to, playing that style.
Yeah. One last thing on Larry Eustachy. That win got Colorado State to 20 wins, so he got like a $40,000 or $50,000 bonus. He got a bonus for not showing up to work the 2 days before he got it.
It's a good gig, if you can get it.
All right, so UNLV, they'll play Fresno State. That's a Tuesday game. It's at home for UNLV, so the important race for the top six so that they have the best chance at winning the conference tournament to get the NCAA tournament. That's what everything's about now. But for Mike Grimala, he's over at RunRev.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff. Thanks for tuning in to the Cowboys.